From our Dusty Cellars, slightly disappointed that Babe Ruth wasn't a little easier on the eye. It's the final countdown. I'm Manus Cronin.
It's another baseball week.
Was Babe Ruth crazy in any way? We'll get to that.
We can get to Babe Ruth if you like. Joining us this week, as always, he works in childcare, Gavin Carberry.
Hello! Also
joining us, he's straight edge, Jack Toner.
Hi.
Also joining us, he digs for coal underground, and they each have an altogether different conception of a minor threat, James Belfast. One joke can become three jokes.
Easy.
That's very good. So, like, Gav deals with children, James was coal, and I...
You're straight edge.
Yeah.
Is brilliant. Referencing the band Minor Threat.
Brilliant.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Yeah. See, we've got a new format for this. You could mixy-matchy. This is good. Yeah.
When the first two didn't really have anything to them, I thought it was just, Manus just had a really bad one for me. But I was pleasantly surprised. That it was all three coming together.
Coming together, are they? I'd say probably. You better hurry up then, because I'm nearly there.
Just so the listener knows, you had a lot of fun before the show, so your mileage may vary this week.
What?
What is on the agenda, Manus?
Nothing. It's a blank slate. There's the little cursor is blinking at me, and there's nothing after it. So these are always the best ones.
What's the producer saying in your ear, Manus?
He is saying, "Get a better job." That's my mom. Sorry, that's my mom. She's also saying, "Move out of the house." And there's a lot of other really quite hurtful things that I think, if you look at my childhood, were largely her fault, to be honest. But there you go.
Yeah, why are you blaming me? Raised me.
Old mama passed the book, Cronin.
That's the one thing that's not my fault, is who I am. If I'd been consulted, I might not have thought the whole project was a good idea to begin with. You know, this should have died in the committee room, let's be honest.
The cutting room floor would have had one more man on it.
We don't need more. We might not need less, probably need less, but we definitely don't need more. The amount we have is more than or equal to how many is necessary. We know that much for sure. But before we get into any of that, it's time to, I guess we could do a baseball player. I was running into the problem that I knew I would. It's like they're all, even the really crazy ones are so, they're so normal compared to Rube Waddell.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, chasing fire trucks really was blowing the load on that whole sport.
I just cannot believe that they would have to like stop him from chasing fire trucks.
We'll try one. We'll see. I have one in the back pocket if it seems like we're running out of things to talk about.
We could talk about any other Ken Burns.
Yeah,
well. Some crazy jazz players you guys need to know about.
A lot of crazy guys in the Vietnam War.
Or at least they were crazy when they came back.
They sure were. They were spat on as well. I don't know what that was about. But before we get introduced to anything on the agenda, it is time to get introduced to the beers. Now, lads, again, I think you all filled out your application forms in full.
I did, yeah.
You can all be Fallout Boy if you weren't an inch too short.
You'd be damn straight. This week we have gone for St. Mel's Brewing Co.'s I Will Ya, a double dry hopped juicy pale IPA, clocking in at 4%, and it's in a green can.
I know they're technically correct here in what they're using the word to describe, but I think using double in the name of any beer that's 4% just seems somehow dishonest to me.
Yes, it does. Completely.
I'm not going to lie, when I recommended that we should, when I was like, hey, what are we having tonight? Let's do this one. I did read the double before I read the four, and you can tell what kind of mood I was in.
Yeah. Needed the strong stuff.
Look, it's an uphill battle, but maybe it's really tasty.
I'm sure it's fine, but like DDH IPA, I suppose that is. If you see DIPA, you're thinking like 7% would be weak.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas DDH, like, it's a technical like brewing term. I don't know, does it mean anything for the flavor, or like to the consumer, does that mean nothing? Maybe the beer nut could entertain us. Not entertain us. He's always entertaining us, educating us.
DDH on a wristband, like a What Would Jesus Do wristband, except it just says DDH and it does drinking help. And anything you're doing, if it's not going well, you just say, hey, does drinking help? And you find that out.
Yeah. I'm about to fail my driving test. Well,
can't get any worse.
The only thing that's going to save me now is confidence. Too much confidence.
Double dry hops. So this beer presumably doesn't have any hops in it because they kept them dry.
They kept them out of the whole process altogether.
No hops whatsoever.
Yeah, well, they have. It's like their homeopathic approach to putting hops in. It was just the aroma, the aura of the hops impacts the flavor more so for having not been in there.
St. Mel's, we've had their brown on. Have we had anything else by St. Mel's?
Now, I actually had a St. Mel's left over from a previous Craft Central order, which was the Asher Luckett Rich Malty Springbok Lager. And I don't know, I don't think he, I think this was off air by everybody else. I just had it before this show. Probably the best lager I've ever had, and that wasn't a Carlsberg.
Whoa!
But I don't really like lager that much. I actually didn't know it was a lager until I started looking at it, and I was like, oh, this is just really easy to drink and quite nice.
Very nice. Very, very nice.
Maybe it's just the least lagery lager I've ever had. I mean, it's no Coors Light. Like, it's still a craft beer, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a pretty low, ceiling on how good that can be compared to Coors Light.
Yeah, and I remember St. Mel's Brown being nice, but browns generally tend to do quite well on our show. Just something about like the flavor of them. We just love them. Like, there's no science behind it. I've had a first taste of this. I don't know if anyone else has. It's nice. It's quite light on the palate, I would say. I think I'm getting like apple-y notes, like a little bit. Like, it's kind of lightly fruity, light. It's very, like, it fizzes up. It gives quite a foamy head, and a little bit burpy maybe, but
nothing worse than burpy head.
Stop making that face. Stop making that face in the Zoom. Stop making that face in the Zoom. overall, I'd be pretty happy with the first taste of this. Like, it's quite clean and lightly fruity, and apple and kind of pears will be what the fruit that I'd get. What about you guys?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much just agree with what you said. Definitely getting a bit of apple as well, I think. It's very foamy as well, but yeah, I generally like it.
The apple thing is blowing my mind because I never would have said it if you didn't, Gavin, but you've really nailed it.
Where's all this apple coming from? I'm not sure I would have picked it up or not if you hadn't said it, but now that you have, it's very obvious.
I'm glad that
Oh my God, I'm getting the beer nuts powers. One time I was taking a sip of a beer and I was like, oh, this just tastes like a standard beer. And the beer said the word tobacco and suddenly it was all I could taste.
You were also bitten by a radioactive hairless spider and it gave you his powers. On a slightly more serious note, it is odd and very true that probably one of the biggest things blocking us from being able to describe things better and even, dare I say, taste them better is a lack of the vocabulary.
Yeah, completely.
Like, it's kind of hard to recognize a taste if you don't have something, a name for it, and a category, or at least a category you can put it in.
So I think that's why a lot of it's why most of the time when I drink any sort of craft beer, the first word I jump to is citrusy, and citrusy is what I taste because that's what I know. And there's an element of that, but I wouldn't like necessarily describe. If I wanted to think that this beer was citrusy, I could probably convince myself. But I'm trying to like get outside of that like intellectual laziness of just like being like, it's a fruit, it's lemon. Trying to like be a bit more precise in my descriptions.
It's a fruit, it's tomato.
I'm actually getting tomato.
Oh my God. Classic apple tomato salad.
Yeah, but overall, I really like it. I think it's a good beer. A bit foamy, a bit burpy. Like I'm kind of, I don't know. It's repeating on me a bit or something.
It is. That is also happening with me.
yeah. But yeah, I'd be excited. Like I'm looking forward to trying the rest of it and seeing if like that kind of mellows out of it. But we'll see. Manus, what are you drinking?
Anal water.
Anal water? What?
A can of water.
A can of water. Oh, okay.
From the brand Cano Water.
Cano Water.
Sparkling spring water in a can. I couldn't not buy it when I saw it. There it was. I went to the store to buy a soda pop for this evening, and they had this, and I was, you know, it's not a soda pop, but
that's the most un-Manus purchase I've ever seen made by a Manus.
No, wait, do you love sparkling water, Manus?
Yeah, I really like sparkling water.
Yeah. I think
Okay.
I really like sparkling water, and I really like gimmicky presentations of things. So.
Oh, I see now. That's my bad. I thought you just like judging me for liking gimmicky presentations of things, like when we bought that pint glass cat shaped.
No, I was with you. I was like, oh yeah, this is what we're buying now because this is unusual. It was a can of Sapporo. a very basic can. Japanese lager, a pint can, and it was the shape and feel of a glass. It was. I've never seen them anywhere else. I would probably buy them again. If I did, anything. Remember when embossed cans started becoming a thing? Now they're kind of loads of things happening, but I think Heineken might have been one of the first. Heineken for about 6 months because they had an embossed can when no one else did.
Just that tactile experience that Heineken gives you that Carlsberg did not.
You know, I mean, Jesus, you're not buying it for the flavor difference. this can of sparkling water is fine. Which, if nothing else, should put to bed a thing that I thought was gone. I didn't think anyone thought this anymore, but you do occasionally still hear it, which the idea that the can negatively affects the flavor of anything. If it's not affecting fizzy water, then whatever beer you're drinking out of a can is not, there's no residual can taste happening. It must have used to happen.
Yeah. Like maybe they've changed the metal that they use or some new process has meant that that's not a issue anymore, but yeah, it's too widespread for it not to have been the case somewhere at some point.
Now I do know because I did a little bit of research on cans that they used to do things like have like a wax coating on the inside, so they obviously were trying to prevent something from happening.
Yeah,
not really sure what that was, because an aluminium, is it going to taste like aluminium's fairly inert, isn't it? Or no it isn't aluminium one of those ones that that explodes? I can't remember.
I
prefer cans of soda pop to bottles of soda pop to draft soda pop, so maybe
I love a draft soda pop though.
Yeah, but see, you that's get... a different It's a
feel
different
like a big boy.
Thing.
It's an entirely different thing because it's fizzy water and sugar syrup. It's whereas the
I'm with you. I love a Fenton Coke or something every now and again. But it is, that's a different liquid.
I think I prefer the can.
Yeah,
I could see that. Certainly over the plastic bottle. I would argue the glass bottle of Coke is where it's at.
Oh yeah.
Part of that's just probably the tactile having the glass.
And also the nostalgia, like, you know, in the pub with your dad when you're like a 5-year-old getting a glass bottle of Coke, fucking for sure.
Yeah, that's what it is. And like a proper Coke is almost like when you consider the size of a 5-year-old, it's like you might as well be giving them a couple of cheeky lines, like, you know.
Now, I did get a text. I just want to say, I did get a text from frequent listener and only person who gives us feedback last week that we can never have careers in public life because we made jokes about showing kids porn at a young age. And now we're suggesting giving them drugs at a young age. And I just want the listeners to know
that the damage is done. We are...
Yeah,
fuck it. Fuck it. The damage is done anyway.
We might as well be like, because then we get to give them guns. Hello, child.
Hello. Larry. And then you've got a high toddler with a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A child, Larry. It worked out well for all those African dictators.
Coked out toddler with a gun who's got his first taste of pornography does not make. does not make for a stable warlord, I'll tell you that much.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, we started that trying to make a point about, like, porn having gone too extreme, which I don't think would be that unmainstream of an opinion. I think that's a fairly...
Yeah, I think that would... Yeah.
I don't agree with it.
But where we got to of, like, the French style of giving your child a glass of wine with dinner...
And it got there like so quick.
We're trying to retrace our
steps.
We're trying to retrace our steps. We're trying to retrace our steps to showing porn to children, when in reality it was one big jump we were all happy to make.
I think it was that we should try and respond, like, and just like draw a line under our generation. Our minds are already warped by what's out there, but like, try and not have our children like ratcheted up yet further. I think that was the point. But of course, we kind of got sidestepped.
One person made a joke, the other person elaborated, and then the third person took that seriously and ran with it. And then the fourth person made a joke, and suddenly, where were we?
Yeah. It must have been what it was like to play against Jonah Lomu for the first time that anyone ever did that. Where it's just like, I don't know, he had the ball, he was there, and now we're 50 points down. I don't know what happened. It was really fast. This doesn't usually happen.
I think this has happened. Sometimes people score. Sometimes people make inappropriate jokes. But at this rate and to this extreme.
Yeah,
Maradona died this week, was it? Or the week just gone. And a lot of people... we're saying, like, you know, you compare Maradona to Messi in terms of kind of physical stature, they're similar. In terms of playing style, they're similar. And the thing that's always said is, like, Maradona could play now, whereas Messi couldn't play back then. Like, the surfaces were crap. They used to kick the shit out of each other. The referees wouldn't protect the players and all of that. And also Messi is playing in, like, a superstar Barcelona team, whereas Maradona, you know, essentially won the World Cup single-handedly. You know, it was a generational performance. And now that you mentioned Jonah Lomu, is he the only player where we could go, like, in the opposite direction to everyone else? Like, every professional player has it easier now than they had it in the past. Whereas Jonah Lomu had it so easy because, like, he was playing against amateurs and he was just, like, a freak of nature in terms of his, like, athleticism.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was...
He has Ronda Rousey syndrome.
What would you describe Ronda Rousey syndrome as?
The best when no one was good.
Yeah, people were good.
Very few people were good, or if you're... Where you can be, like, you can be 50% better than everyone that exists right now, but in 10 years' time, you'll be the worst one.
Hmm. With Lomu, it's a weird one because it's almost entirely physical in terms of, like, you know, back then people were skilled, people were good at rugby, but, like, how many people were hitting the gym, pounding the protein, pounding the creatine?
Not enough,
you know. And
I would compare him to a Jose Canseco.
I hear we're back in baseball, baby.
like, he was one of the first guys in baseball to embrace weightlifting. Now, he also, it later turned out, was embracing steroids.
he had a pretty wide embrace.
But both he and Mark McGwire played on the same Oakland Athletics team, and it looked like they were about the same as each other. But McGwire went on to also be amazing when everyone else started taking steroids too. Canseco, not so much. Now, I don't know how true that is of John Alomu as well, because I know he had a lot of health problems. So, like, a lot of years of his career that he...
Where he was, like, debilitated.
You can only judge a guy on when he played. I tend to think that the best... You're right in that the way he was the best mightn't necessarily translate as well to now. Because it was, I mean, yes, he was skillful, and yes, he was quick, and but the thing that made him that much better was that he was a physique in a time when
he was quick. He was as quick as wingers are today, while also being the size of a fridge.
Yeah. I mean, you can go back and watch. I remembered it being that way from when I was a child watching him. But if you go back and watch it now, it's even funnier almost. That's not fair.
Yeah, because
he was only at his very best for... Did he even get 4 years? I mean, watching the World Cup in 95, and it is like watching a 15-year-old play against under 10s. Like, it's insane. Just like, it just seemed like he was going to score every time he got the ball.
Yeah.
A lot of that comes from, I guess, you're watching highlights, so you're not watching the full game. But I remember watching him play against Ireland and it just being like, I didn't fully understand what rugby was, I guess, as well. Part of me just thought, oh, is that just... Like, I guess you just run over everyone and then you score.
Yeah. Why don't we just give it to our Jonah Lomu?
All right. We're taking our number eight and we're putting him on the wing. Let's see what happens. Which in school,
who's our number eight? Leamy.
Good idea.
You bring up Mark. Doesn't that remind you of when Munster tried to play David Wallace at like 12 or something? I remember they did that for a while. Well, he's quite quick for a big fella. Let's put him in there. Or when Italy tried to play one of the Bergamascos at nine, didn't they do that?
For me, the definitive big boy in the backs is Bastereau from France. Where I was just like, you've fundamentally changed what that position is forever. And there's bulging, no going back.
He was bulging with what could be muscle. We weren't sure what he was made of. Yeah, Matthew Bastereau was an oddly proportioned. It felt like he was changing that position forever, but then he didn't. Like, you know, that's not what happened. There are lots of non-Bastereau shaped centers still playing, but yeah, I certainly at the time, yeah, it did start to feel like, well, okay, this is going to be
something of an arms race. Center,
there was an arms race going on.
Eat up,
yeah, it was nuts. It's funny that that just when Maradona was being brought up, and there's a lot of writing going on about Maradona at the moment, and a bunch of it trying to sort of explain by virtue of what his life was like and by virtue of everything. It's like, and of course, we'll never fully understand why he threw it all away for cocaine, you know?
Much of a leap.
Like, has cocaine anyone...
this class?
Yeah, it's like no journalist touched on like how deadly... And they're journalists, so I know they know. How deadly cocaine makes you feel. And like, it's like, well, why would he? It's like, well, we all know people who'll just do it on the couch with two other blokes at 3 a.m.
At no point
the best footballer alive.
You're hanging out with mafia people and supermodels and like with the best cocaine in the world. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people will
almost
bigger deal and especially in the 80s, you know.
Especially in the 80s. And like, did it affect his professional career and his performance? Not that much. Like, you know, his time in Napoli ended quite sourly, but like, he was still fucking an amazing footballer while having the time of his life.
And he was still living large right up until the end, pretty much.
And he was still living large right up until the end. And he got to be Argentina manager twice, like, despite like his tactical knowledge being, I'm Maradona, you should be too.
Yeah, there's a Netflix documentary on Netflix, of all places, Maradona in Mexico when he's managing the Sinaloa football team.
Mm.
I've only seen in two episodes of it, but yeah, it's just like he's, I can't quite figure out what he's contributing as a manager, really, because I think he was such a fantastic player that it must... you do see that with guys.
He's like, just like, okay, you get the ball on the halfway line, dribble for everyone and score.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't do that.
He seems to mostly be motivating them, which I guess that's a thing, yeah, too. And you need to do that a bit. But I mean, you could see why if someone was, yeah, really good. It's like, well, okay, first you should be an amazing football player, and then you just go and win the game if that's at all possible.
I think I read someone say that that's why Brian O'Driscoll would be a terrible coach. He just like can't understand why people can't do things.
He's and, too good at rugby to train people who aren't.
Yeah,
there's a season of Ultimate Fighter. I can't remember which number it was, but in which BJ Penn and I think Jens Pulver was the other coach. Actually, it's irrelevant who the other coach is because I'm talking of here is BJ Penn. And BJ Penn coaches his Ultimate Fighter team in a way that would work if they were all BJ Penn. But, like, he's like, we don't really need to do the morning session and we'll just kind of roll around for a bit. And, and fight time will come and, you probably just win, he has no comprehension of what they might need to do because he was a prodigy. So it's instructive, if nothing else, and you can watch it. Similar thing always comes up when someone why would someone take performance enhancing drugs? And I heard Lance Storm make this argument. He's completely right. He's like, you and your mates probably take drugs just because they're fun, and you don't understand why a professional sports player would take performance enhancing drugs.
Have you ever enhanced your performance at anything? It feels great.
Yeah, it feels fantastic. Doesn't even feel that good. I mean, it does, but it doesn't. Like, it's not worth it. You ever wake up in the morning and be like, glad I did that last night?
Absolutely not. Never.
Or ever wake up having not done it and go like, whoa, man, I wish I got fucked up. I wish I got fucked up last night.
One time, a friend of mine had recently bought weed jellies and we took a small amount and got like a little bit giddy. And then I went home at 8 o'clock, fell asleep at 9 o'clock, woke up at 8 o'clock having had the best night's sleep of my goddamn life. Yeah. And I was like, that's probably the healthiest thing I've ever done. Not like drinking 6 pints, just like taking a bit of weed and going to sleep.
They need to be able to go and buy some jellies in the fucking shop and know what it is, and that's just something that needs to happen. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, I suppose. Something struck me about this can of water, and it is that I cannot figure out why it's €2.15.
How well marketed was it?
It's just a can of water on the shelf. I mean,
you're not answering my question.
That was enough to. Was enough to sell it to me. I bought it. Well, I'm not sure I'd buy it again, though. Why is a can of beer half the price of this in the same shop?
That is pretty crazy to me. And I also don't understand how sparkling water is. Like, how is something naturally sparkling? What gets up in there?
Surely nothing is naturally sparkling.
Many of them claim that they are. Perrier certainly claimed that they're naturally sparkling.
Sorry, the reason that is allowed is because natural is not a regulated word. So it's
fine. Okay. Yeah, yeah. As in, like, I mean,
cocaine is natural.
If you pumped CO2 into this naturally, it would sparkle.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain a number of them claim that it comes out of the ground, it comes out of their well, sparkling.
Which for something like mass produced like Perrier is very hard to believe that maybe it is. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I suppose
I'm confident in saying that there is no underground sparkle reservoir that they're pumping.
Oh, probably. It would stand to reason that there wouldn't be.
If that's the thing that I get corrected on in this show, it'll have been worth it.
So I've no idea. I've no idea whether it does or whether.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Not even that. Like everyone that claims that to be naturally sparkling is naturally sparkling, but does there exist?
Is it even Like, are they even lying about something that exists? Like,
yeah, at least, yeah.
You know, and I guess I'd feel more duped if it's not even possible. Or would I feel like fair play to them because it, like, a reasonable person wouldn't have thought that, you know?
Like, it, if it exists and it's like one artisanal supplier who sells it at like, you know, 50 euro a bottle or whatever, Perrier can call something naturally sparkling, I'm fine with that, whatever, you know. But like, if it, if it's physically impossible, fuck them. Fuck them.
Fuck Perrier right off.
Is it organic?
Yes, it's water.
Well, there you go. That's why it's
no pesticides. We didn't put pesticides right in this water.
Here's and a gimmicky bit. Water. Here's a gimmicky bit that they don't need. I don't know if you can see this lid.
I've had that water.
Yeah, you can reseal it.
Yeah, that gimmicky lid probably makes it harder to recycle.
I would imagine so, because like the what's the biggest thing about an aluminium can is that it's not only recyclable, but it's actually economical to recycle it. It's cheaper to recycle that into a new can than it is to make a new can.
Yeah, yeah.
So anything they're doing, they're just fucking right up. I mean, they're doing this to make it
to make it seem fancier.
And you can reseal it, but
oh yeah.
I mean, it's not that much water. Are people really resealing them? I mean,
it's the small thirsty boy market they're trying to corner.
Yes, yeah. It's that toddler who just took a bunch of cocaine, got a gun. There's a thirsty boy, take your fizzy water. Yes, you do want fizzy water. No, not more pornography. No, why did you show him pornography?
For the love of God, no.
I know you were trying to distract him. I know he had the gun by that point, but surely, I mean, he's two. Surely there was something.
You got the order
apparently
wrong.
The dinosaur or something would have worked.
No. Your keys works for most toddlers, but you've gone straight in there.
I forgot you've got big sparkly tits on your keys. That's what caused this confusion.
Very sorry, but it was already 3 o'clock, so and we were already in the meeting, so we had to do that. I don't know. You guys want to hear about a baseball player?
Yeah,
always and forever.
Okay, let's go with Ty Cobb.
Who?
Tyrus Raymond Cobb.
Ty Cobb.
Nicknamed the Georgia Peach, was an American Major League Baseball outfielder. This guy was had a much, much longer career, so I can't just read through his Wikipedia.
Was he a multi-sport guy?
I don't think Ty Cobb played anything other than baseball.
Okay. I'm mixing him up with another. I'm mixing up with Randall Cobb. My fault.
Yes, I would imagine it's Randall Cobb you're mixing him up with. Good old Randy, as they say. This is the second in our series on baseball players, and probably the second one in a row who almost certainly, if he was alive now, would have been diagnosed with some sort of mental disorder, although he's much more high functioning than last week's player Rube Waddell was. I suspect, just based on some of the anecdotes, that Ty Cobb probably had something on the autism spectrum. He seems to rather not like being touched. He was hyper focused.
And it's gonna get funny.
Yeah, yeah. And he also chased fire trucks again.
Yeah, more fire truck stories.
It's really, look, it's starting with Waddell was a problem because even Cobb, who is a bizarre fella, doesn't match up in certainly not in headline terms to Rube Waddell. Ty Cobb was not an extraordinary player, but he played in the dead ball era. And what extraordinary offensive players looked like then was a little different to what they looked like after.
Can you explain what the dead ball era is?
So prior to, and I don't have the date on the top of my head.
Decade will be fine.
A number of changes. Okay, so everything, let's say 1918. That's not really accurate, but That's around the time that Babe Ruth became a full-time player and moved to the Yankees. And they changed the ball. The dead ball era was basically a very pitcher-friendly era in which not a lot of home runs were scored. There was a number of factors contributing to it. Parks were not uniform. Some of the center field fences were, so you couldn't hit a home run over them. The equipment was worse. The balls were worse. They didn't bring in the cork-centered ball until the late teens. There was an incident in the late teens. I don't know when it was exactly. A guy called Ray Chapman got pitched at it. Somebody pitched at his head. They hit him and he died. One of the reasons why they figured that might have happened is because he couldn't see the ball in time. And one of those reasons could have been the ball was dirty. So after then they started bringing in new balls far more regularly. Because one of the first things you would do as a pitcher when you got a new ball was to scuff it up and everything. There was lots of trick pitches that you could legally employ, spitball, emery ball. Emery ball was just, again, scuffing it. Spitball was shining up one side of it.
All that cricket shit, that's easier because the ball is more clearly in two halves.
Yeah, I mean, people probably still do that sort of thing, but you can't make a song and dance out of it. Yeah. So there was lots of things like that. And Babe Ruth, there's very few players in any sport ever who changed the sport like he did.
What did Babe Ruth do?
He just started hitting home runs at a rate that had never been done. When he broke the record, the first time he broke the home run hitting record, I think he did it by hitting 30, and the record had been like 12.
Whoa.
And the guy who hit 12 had done so in a oddly proportioned park. So now if the right or left field fence is I think it's under 250 feet, could be wrong, but whatever the distance is. If you hit it over that fence, it's not a home run, it's a ground rule double, I think. So you just get two bases in those days. No, if it went over the fence, it was a home run. So they got, again, 12 might not be the right number, 30 might not be the right number. Babe Ruth eventually hit 60, and that stood until Roger Maris hit 61 in the 60s, and he hit, so 30 or 40 years later, and he hit 61 in more games. It took more games to do it.
What did Babe Ruth do different that led to more home runs, or was he just
a big hitter in a way that it hadn't been profitable to do before, I suppose. Just nobody had done it, and nobody really hit like him again until steroids. I mean, guys like, we say Roger Maris did hit 61, so he did hit more home runs, but they didn't. There isn't really footage of a Babe Ruth home run that's good enough to show you what's happening, but he was clearing the fences by loads. He was just hitting it further and harder and more frequently than anyone had done, and that anyone did again, until the likes of Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco and those guys who were jacked up on the old steroids. Someone like him would have eventually come along, given all the other changes I talked about. But he was as good a player. He's the best player there was ever. And the only argument against that is he didn't have to play against black people.
Yeah.
But the nature of baseball is such that it's not like he would have suddenly not been able to hit their pitching. He actually, of course, did play against black people in the offseason. They all barnstormed in the offseason. So we do sort of know how he did. He did fine.
Wait, is that what's barnstorming, and is that where it comes from?
Barnstorming in the sense of baseball, I don't know. But in baseball, it means that you would go around and local town would pay you to come and play in an exhibition game against their team or for their team, or whatever. So the first professional baseball teams were barnstorming teams. So like the Cincinnati Red Legs or Red Stockings, I think, were one of the first fully professional outfits. And yeah, what they did is they would travel around taking on all comers or taking on whoever paid them enough. And that was kind of the financial model of baseball for a while. And they still did it in the off season because they weren't, for the most part, paid that much. And even those like Ruth, who were paid an awful lot for the time, could always be paid more.
Yeah, yeah. Like, hey, I ain't gonna turn down money.
And they didn't stop them from doing such things either. Yeah. So it was a bigger undertaking. You could go to South America and play. You could do just lots of things you do. I forgot where I was when I...
So Babe Ruth was playing against black people through barnstorming, and then Babe Ruth is a big hitter, and then... Yeah.
So, no, sorry, my point is that we don't... It's not like suddenly he couldn't hit again. And, like, the pitching in the Negro Leagues was excellent. There were... but it's not like he couldn't hit it, so it's not like that would have tilted his... Because he was so much better than everybody else. A few extra quality players in the league would probably have affected his numbers a little. The other thing is he was also a world-class pitcher. When he was with the Boston Red Sox in the teams, he won three World Series as a pitcher. Even if everything else was close on the offensive side, he was also probably Hall of Fame level, or maybe a touch below Hall of Fame level pitcher. You can look up Babe Ruth if you want. He's in some ways a fascinating individual, because he also wasn't a particularly reflective guy. I don't think he...
when you're that good, you don't have to be.
Not a deep thinker.
I don't think he changed the game by like trying to. I think he just
played baseball. Hit
the ball far.
I'm picturing like a kind of Lenny from Of Mice and Men kind of a hit ball.
He wasn't that. No, he wasn't dumb. Right? He wasn't.
I don't
dumb.
Squeeze the bat too hard and it don't stop.
No, Lenny from Mice and Men is probably a little closer to what Rube Waddell was. I don't think Babe Ruth was dumb. I mean, he was a streetwise kid. He was actually the reason where he got his name. Maybe this one's going to be about Babe Ruth, actually.
Babe Ruth. I always wanted to know.
He got his nickname because the first team he played for he was in a industrial school / reform school / orphanage. His parents weren't dead, but they did abandon him there. And he was quasi-adopted by the Baltimore Orioles, by Jack Dunn. He wasn't really adopted, but he was signed out of the industrial school by a man called Jack Dunn.
At what age? 18
or 19, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But he was...
It wasn't like this.
It wasn't like, oh my God, this toddler can bat.
Yeah, it's like, this 13-year-old is haunchy.
And again, at this time, he was a pitcher, but he was drafted by the Baltimore Orioles, were at that point an independent minor league team owned by a man called Jack Dunn. And the nickname was Jack Dunn's Baby. So he was the Baby Ruth. And that's where he got his name, Baby. Not because of his...
because of how hot he was.
No. I mean, maybe he was a hottie for the teens. I don't know. Maybe he was a teen hottie.
You know what? That game he changed.
Well, he became almost comically overweight later in his career. Early on, he was just a bit husky.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way that you could be. He batted in contrast to the likes of Ty Cobb or any of the other great offensive players before him. He was a slugger. He didn't pay to be a slugger before. You would hit for high average, and you don't see the averages that guys back then hit. Nobody's hit 400 since Ted Williams. I don't remember when he retired, 50s maybe, I don't know. But like Cobb had a career average of like 367 or something like that, which is insane. So they got a lot of hits, a lot of singles, a lot of runs batted in, stolen bases, that kind of thing. There's probably lots of interesting stuff about Babe Ruth, but I don't really know any of it.
Question for you, Manus. I know that you enjoy the Baseball by Ken Burns series. Where does baseball rank among Ken Burns's oeuvre?
Interesting one. I'm trying to think of what's better than it.
What do we got? We got Prohibition, we got Jazz, we got Vietnam.
We got Civil War, which is like
Civil War. There's a Second World War one. I haven't seen the Jazz one. I can't speak on the Jazz one. Yeah, the baseball one's brilliant, but it's
he's got the West
not
as well.
The West, he does have the West as well. I have the West quite low down. And it's possibly just the subject matter that's the problem there. The Prohibition one's the most accessible one. The Civil War is probably the best.
I think Vietnam might, like, I've seen Prohibition, Civil War, and Vietnam, and I think Vietnam might be the best. I just think, like, he does a lot with a little in terms of Civil War and Prohibition, and that's admirable, and, like, it's amazing what he can achieve in terms of documentary making, just with research, experts, voiceover, and, like, some photographs. But, I mean, Vietnam is just better. It's a better thing to watch. It's, like, better put together. The footage is amazing. The way he tells the story and, like, links in back home and Vietnam across every episode is just amazing.
It's probably in the sweet spot as well of, like, there being enough footage and
it's
people are still alive.
It's not just camera panning over old photos and talking to the grandkids of someone.
Yeah, there's enough footage. There's the real guys for the most part who are there. There's a lot of info on it.
The music as well. I mean, if I had to hear fucking Yankee Doodle Dandy one more time, listen to Civil War, like, get that shit off my screen. Give me what's his name? Something Foot. Shelby Foot.
Shelby Foot.
I was still thinking music. I was like, Creedence Clearwater Foot? Incidentally, that is Shelby's son's name. But while still being far, it has all that, while still being far enough back that it's not like, if you tried to do the Iraq War, there'd be too much footage and there'd be too many people still not. You don't have enough distance from it. I don't know. I probably enjoyed the baseball one more than I enjoyed the Vietnam one.
Mm.
But I'm more interested in the subject. The Vietnam one is excellent. And it goes, like, the first two episodes doesn't even feel like it's, I think it's the first two, doesn't even feel like it's going to be about the same war that's in all those movies. Like, it's going into the French period and it just goes further. It starts earlier and ends later than most popular looks at the subject.
Yes,
I think that's
great.
Pretty well. I know. I just had a quick look at his back catalog, and actually his most recent full scale thing was a 4 feature length episode thing about country music, and I'm like, well, that's my Christmas with my dad viewing sort.
A Ken Burns like Christmas view, because you're always looking for like a film or something to watch. The Christmas that Sunderland Till I Die came out was the Christmas to end all Christmases. Just the whole family sitting down and watching Sunderland crash into League One.
Does your family all like football?
No, but they all kind of got into it. It was like me and my dad sitting in the front room, like, watching this. And then my sister pottered in. It's like, what's this? Oh, it's Sunderland Till I Die. It's a documentary about Sunderland. She was like, all right, I'll just be in here on my phone. Started watching it. My brother wandered in. Oh, Sunderland Till I Die. Yeah, I suppose I can watch that. My mum's like, hey, do you guys want to do the crossword? Sunderland Till I Die. And then by the end of the day, all of us were watching Sunderland.
Everyone's wearing Sunderland jerseys.
Yeah.
Will and Lager.
It's you keep waiting for like the hero's story to like kick in and for it to start turning around for them, and it just doesn't.
Yeah. Fucking Chris Coleman's agent had a chat with Netflix. Like, Chris Coleman comes across so fucking well.
Had a chat with Netflix. That's brilliant.
You think the producers are just getting more and more frustrated as the season went on? It's like, now would be a really good narrative turning point, guys. If you just fucking win.
Sunderland Till I Die is an illustration of, like, if you either got to do it right or you got to do it really wrong. Like, like, it would be worse as a doc. I didn't watch the second season. Apparently there is one. But it would be worse if it, if they suddenly, like, won a League Cup or something in the middle.
I think
it's,
a lot of
it's, like, better the way it is.
Yeah. On the back of, they did one about Man City as well, which I've heard is pretty horrible, because in order to gain access, they had to, like, give the Man City team final approval. Yeah. So, like, Man City come across, like, great in it. But, the spate of these football documentaries that came out after Sunderland Till I Die, I have no interest in watching almost all of them.
Like, and that's the problem. Is
maybe Leeds or, like, some, like, other car crash waiting to happen. But, like, do I really want to find out about Tottenham? No.
And that's the problem, is Sunderland Till I Die ruined it for everyone else, because no self-respecting club now is going to be like, just film it. Fuck it.
They'll be like, no, it'll be too honest and too good, and people will watch it, and we'll be crap.
Yeah, like, any chance you might have had of getting a decent documentary out of Man City was probably quite small anyway. But any chance you might have had of getting it went out the window when Sunderland Till I Die came out, and, like, anyone could watch it.
One example that's quite good. So the reason I think that, like, all those teams actually, like, are all independently owned, independently ran, they can kind of do what they want. I would say that the Netflix Drive to Survive Formula One documentary is class.
Really?
It has gotten so many people I know into Formula One just because...
Yeah, I'm one of them. Like, I would have followed it a little bit when I was younger, but then went probably 15 years without ever looking at a result or paying any attention. Then I watched the documentary. It's like, oh yeah, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, I think Formula One needs something like that, because it's like snooker, not in any similarity to the game, but in that, like,
you went from literally the lowest tech imaginable sport to the highest.
It's not inherently unless you're into cars. It's not inherently interesting.
And particularly, like, the championship at the moment has been boring for a long time, because it's just Hamilton has won every year.
But what I love is that they don't care about that. They're like, the story is not that Hamilton is really good at driving fast cars. The story is, like, the daughter of this legend took over the team and she's kind of crap. Let's just see
that. That's the point.
Let's just see that play out.
You need a narrative for something like Formula One.
And with all the teams, they have 10 narratives. And they could just pick whichever one is interesting. So they ignore
it. It's the documentary Red Zone. It's a
it's the documentary Red Zone. That's why, it's why Hard Knocks is sometimes incredible.
Actually, like, you're saying they have 10 hours. I don't think Mercedes show up in that at all, because there's nothing interesting
about the team that wins every week. It's just,
Like,
Lewis Hamilton.
It's like, we've got an Australian guy who's kind of funny and likes to drink beer out of his shoe when he wins. Let's show that.
We have this fucking child who's a prodigy, and all of his people who should be supporting him are kind of scared of him, and maybe they're mean to him. And I'm like, fucking sign me up. Yeah. I want to see that Ferrari driver do maybe well. I don't know. Let's find out.
Is it better if he does well or if he does badly?
I don't know,
what's
Gavin.
Good for him?
Grasping something that all niche sports. Now, again, if they all grasp it properly, it will cease to work. There'll be diminishing returns on it. But it's grasping something that all niche sports should cop, which is that, like, we don't even really care if you're good at it. We just need a story.
Yeah. And let me tell you where you won't find much of a story. Stephen Hendry, me and the table. You get someone who's good at snooker, who remains good at snooker, and is still good at snooker to this day.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Stephen Hendry was bad for snooker. Apart from as a villain, I guess.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even good at that. He wasn't even a love to hate him kind of guy. You just sort of wanted to see him lose because he always won and he was boring. We needed. They didn't all need to be drunken layabouts, but we needed some drunken layabouts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would have settled for 70% drunken layabouts.
Yeah, you know, so I don't know. It's a mystery to some people in sports administration, but it is no mystery to anyone with any sense. They're like, okay, got a competition nobody cares about? Cut the shackles. Let this be the we cut promos on each other one.
Yeah.
Very yeah, fair. And we talked about this when, was it Ronnie O'Sullivan?
Okay,
yes.
I can beat every single one of these kids. Let me tell you, I'm not respect.
you're watching an interview after, and after the Carabao Cup, and they're going, yeah, well, you know, a lot of respect there to the, you know, and the blah, 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 the same media training shit that they always say, and it's like, well, you know, no one watches this, and just because the stakes aren't high enough. So what do you got to lose if you're just like, yes, we respect them in the Premier League, and yes, in the Champions League. But this is the goddamn Carabao Cup! And let me tell you something, brother.
Anything goes! It's Joey Barton with the steel chair!
You know? Relax the rules a little bit. They already sort of have a League Cup team that basically doesn't really play the rest of the time. You know? Fucking, this is the League Cup. Certain fouls.
You're allowed to handle the ball once.
There's one race. There's one Grand Prix a year in Formula One where full contact is allowed. It becomes death race.
I mean, they could put up. They've got money. They could magnify an entire F1 track. Like, get the Nürburgring.
Formula One is the most expensive sport in the world. Full stop. Yeah. Hands
and
down.
It's a. All of that sweet Mosley fascist money is in there, which is all good. It's what we want. But they could turn like temporarily a whole one into a dodgem thing. Particularly now we don't need spectators. Bumper car Formula One. Who doesn't want to see that? It's the same drivers. It's the most skilled drivers.
It's called Destruction Derby. It exists, and it's more crap than you think it's going to be.
Wait, have you seen Destruction Derby?
I've seen footage.
Oh, footage. Oh, okay. I thought it seems like the kind of thing that you need to be at, you know?
Yeah. But you need Lewis Hamilton to be doing it. You don't need a no-name schlub to be doing it.
They take the Mario Kart drink driving rules and bring it over to Formula One.
Yeah.
And then expand it because they've still got, 60, 70 laps to do. And they've also got 20 pints to drink. And they can do it in any order they want.
Yeah, you could fairly safely.
Can't do both at once.
You can safely, in inverted commas, because they're going to crash a lot, but they're not going to die. Have for a version of Formula One where they're in souped-up bumper cars and they can get pissed while they do it. In fact, they have to get pissed while they do it. And it's not every race, because yes, that would get tiring. But one a year, and it's double points. One a year, and it's double championship points,
and it's for all the marbles. It's like one of those game shows where like the last round is the only one that counts, but you've earned some sort of advantage through the other ones, like, and Lewis Hamilton gets to go on my first whistle.
Take the gladiators thing, just Rhino is just in the middle of the track one day.
We're
lucky that Roman Grosjean is okay. Otherwise, this episode would be in really poor taste.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But he seems to be fine. He almost died a couple of yesterday, but seems to be totally fine. I'd love it down one path. It's actually in one of those courses that splits in half and you go over each other and there's jumps and shit. And down one path.
No, Jack's overcomplicating it again. This is never going to happen.
I'm starting to think this might never happen.
The other path was going to be was Sir Kill-A-Lot from Robot Wars, but now you don't get Sir Kill-A-Lot from Robot Wars.
Good. Sir Kill-A-Lot from Robot Wars. He's indestructible.
Hang on, are we just letting this go? Oh, well, now you don't get any of it.
Well, look, man, since you brought it up, you may remember last week I made some plans, some would say, about a particular board game I wanted to play. And all I have to say to you cunts is, here is the box for Gloomhaven.
Yeah, I think we made it clear that impulse purchases are the exception to the Jack plan.
And the game is scheduled for this weekend.
Oh, okay, right. So that actually took, well, yeah, you've spent.
But only out of spite. And also, this game is ridiculously heavy.
Yeah,
it's very weak.
It's a chunk of a game.
I don't think that proves or disproves anything, Jack, to be perfectly
not
honest.
Yeah, but I'm just doing a little check-in that maybe I'm on the right path.
Maybe.
The plan is to be on the right path.
Oh, wait, it's a plan.
Yeah. Ah, shit. Yeah, I should cancel.
This is actually going to be even worse. This is going to be the stick that's used to beat us over the head for the next, like, 10 years, where it's going to be like, oh, but remember, I did buy the game.
Remember,
this is going to be like when I got Gloomhaven, guys. This isn't going to be like all those other times. Remember when I got Gloomhaven? Come on! Matter of fact, I'm going to rent an airplane for the whole thing. That way we can fly there.
Ah, good.
I will never apologize for dreaming.
No one's asking you to apologize for dreaming.
We're asking to show up to Wexford every once in a while.
Man, you know.
Man.
Yeah, I don't know. The baseball thing kind of trailed off, but to be honest with you, I didn't have anywhere to go with it. Ty Cobb had a crazy life, but, you know, maybe we'll come
back.
You need
to find a new Rube Waddell.
Yeah, it kind of peaked with the old Rube.
You need to find a new sport with an existing and currently active Rube Waddell.
Oh, so MMA and John Jones. Ty Cobb's mother did shoot his father, murder his father, killed his father.
Did he deserve it?
Kind of. And by I say kind of, I mean absolutely.
Yeah, I always feel when it's a woman killing a man, I'm like, but how many times did he hit her?
Oh, yeah, it wasn't that. It was crazier than that.
Brilliant. Let's hear it.
It was his pistol. He bought her the pistol for self-defense in case there was any intruders. So he filled her head with the thought that the house might be filled with intruders. But he also got it into his head that she was having an affair. Oh. So what Ty Senior, actually I don't know what his name was. It might not have been Ty Senior. In fact, it almost certainly wasn't. What Ty Senior decided to do was to fake a business trip, pretend he was going out of town on business, and sneak back into the bedroom to catch her with her lover that he thought she had. She mistook him for an intruder and shot him dead.
Insert gif of DJ Khaled, you played yourself.
So wait, what?
Did he deserve to die for that stupidity? I don't know. Did he bring on his murder himself? Yes.
Yes. Literally 100,000%.
Yeah. and remember, baby, shoot first. Look at the door later.
Ty Cobb did once go into the stands to assault a heckler who had later turned out had no arms.
After the assault.
In the middle of it. He's choking him on top of him, and the crowd are telling him to stop because he has no arms, and Ty Cobb says, I don't care if he has no feet, and he keeps going.
Holy fuck.
To show you the morality of the time, though, he got suspended for that, but his team went on strike in protest. They didn't think it was fair that he got suspended for that. He was getting such a doing that he thought, well, what else could a man do?
Listen, we all agree that what he did was wrong, but suspended for a game?
I mean, come on! The guy had no arms. What was he going to do? He should have known not to shout anything. Well, there you go. That's probably the best of the Ty Cobb stuff.
That's good Ty Cobb content.
Yeah. You really stuck the landing on Ty Cobb there.
The problem with Cobb is a lot of the information on him comes from a book written by a man called Al Stump, who it turns out was a spoofer. So he made a lot of stuff up. There was also a film made based on that book starring Tommy Lee Jones. So there's two levels of spoof involved. And then it kind of, when it turned out Al Stump was a spoofer, then the revisionism started and it kind of went too far the other way. So now you can read about Ty Cobb and have him just be normal, and that's not true either. So it was real hard to figure out what happened and what didn't. But the beating the harmless man happened for sure, because again, these are things the league has records of. They suspended him for it.
Wait, Matt, did you say armless or harmless?
Oh, both. Both, both.
Oh, okay. Yeah, great. Yeah. Because I said I arm. Say, he still had feet, so...
he could have done some harm with his feet. Ty Cobb didn't care if he had feet, but he did. And again, the mother shooting the father, there's court records about that. The mother was tried and quickly acquitted of that. So, there you go.
Brilliant.
That's Ty. Excellent.
I guess it's beer review time. Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah. Who wants to go first?
I'll jump in. It's nice. It kind of flies under the radar a little bit.
Big time.
There's not a huge amount to it. Like, any of the novelty that came from Gavin saying the word apple an hour ago kind of disappeared quite quickly. And now I'm just drinking this beer. I got to say, there is undeniable quality to drinking a beer and not noticing. And this fits firmly in that category and is almost by definition a 7.
7. Very good. Very good. James?
Yeah, that's hard to disagree with. Yeah, I was picking up the fruitiness, the apple at the beginning. As soon as you stop focusing on it, you just forget about it. And then half an hour later, you have an empty glass. And like, there's nothing more to say. It is a complete background beer, really. It's well made. It's nice, but it's a bit unremarkable. But that's not the worst thing in the world for a beer. It's, you know, very drinkable. But yeah, I think you can't really go much higher or lower than a 7.
7, very good. I agree with all the points, except for you can't really go higher than a 7, because I'm going to give it an 8. I think that, like, the initial taste was good. Like, the apple was a bit surprising to me, and I really enjoyed it. But yeah, it faded into the background. And Jack, as you say, there's something to be said for a beer that fades into the background. Like, you don't want to be thinking about how delicious your beer is all night when you're chatting to your buddies. So yep. For me, it's an 8.
Yep. And let me tell you, the
only score thing... final countdown score of 7.333333333.
Unreal. I think that, like, this is the beer that fits perfectly into, like, I want to have a beer with my buddies, but I don't want my buddies, I don't want, like, the only place I want to talk about the beer I'm having is in this precise context.
Yeah.
Therefore, this is perfect for every other context. And in many ways, yeah. This one.
Can I just say, lads, that for next week, team dressing gown is 50% of this podcast. Let's see if we can get those numbers up.
I did see when you were adjusting your laptop earlier, I wasn't sure if that was a long shirt and you were sitting weird or if you were wearing a dressing gown.
This is a dressing gown. This
very
is
nice.
My clothes now since lockdown are just tracksuit and dressing gown. That's all I wear.
So wait, James, are you team dressing gown?
Oh yeah.
Okay, right. I've got a dressing gown over here.
Gilet season is long behind us.
God, yeah, you're right. I didn't even read Home and Country Monthly to check in if this was the month that change happened. But of course, James, as a contributing writer, has determined that it is in fact so.
And I hope you're ready for house coat season.
I got a pro tip from someone that the real, and this was he had it in the framed it as a great gift for, like, a brother, and it was some really nice slippers, some really nice house shoes, but the best ones were UGG slippers.
Oh yeah, UGGs are the best.
Do you have UGGs?
But they have to remain inside your house.
Oh yeah, they're not for outdoor wear. You take off your shoes and you put on your Uggs and then you're in the house.
And that should have been obvious to anyone who's ever seen a pair of Uggs and been rained on.
Yes.
They're indoor shoes.
Does anyone own a pair of Ugg slippers?
I don't know.
I'm a Crocs guy. Oh, my slippers are Crocs.
Oh, Crocs, yeah. Another.
Are you actually
shoe.
A Crocs guy?
Or a shoe for nurses.
Yeah, like, shoe for nurses, you shoe wear for Crocs, indoors. Man. I wear Crocs in the house, yeah. Nothing but.
Ooh, okay, well, we have an agenda item for next week anyway.
Awesome shoe choices with Manus. I'm with you.
Yeah. Objectively correct answers to subjective questions. We'll bring that old gem.
That's
good stuff.
Really? Gives us only one thing to choose to. To team dressing gown.
To team dressing gown.
The Final Countdown was brought to you by James Belfast, Jack Toner, Gavin Carberry, and Manus Cronin.
Find us on social media at FAL Countdown, or contact us directly on finalcountdown@gmail.com.